case of United States against Carini. Mr. Gunther.
Thank you. May it please the Court, my name is Eric Gunther. I speak for Fabio Carini. Mr. Carini comes before you following a conviction in a criminal case in which he was charged with three counts, two for knowing receipt of child pornography and one for knowing possession. As to the two counts with respect to knowing receipt, for one, after 3 days of deliberation, all 12 jurors acquitted him. As to the other, they were unable to reach a unanimous verdict. As to the single count for which a verdict of guilty was returned, it was done scarcely an hour and a half after the judge had answered a question of the jury. That question was, does downloading, viewing, and deleting constitute possession? It's Carani's position that that question was incorrectly answered by the trial court. The answer that the court provided was that it depends on whether at the time of download the defendant knew or strongly suspected that the material was child pornography. That response is incorrect in two places. First, factually, at the time of download, a user of Kazaa clicks a button to select an item for download. At that point, that user possesses nothing. There isn't anything that a user can view because until a file is completely downloaded. And in this case, no file for which the government accused Mr. Carani of possessing had been viewed. And further, there's no evidence as to what search term, if any, led to that file existing on the computer. And the government doesn't dispute this. In fact, the government takes issue with our brief, appellant brief, saying that we focus incorrectly at the time of download and cites to this court's decision in Myers. Trial counsel for Mr. Carani also cited for Myers, saying that you would be incorrect to focus at the time of download for a charge of knowing possession. It only makes sense to do so for the knowing receipt of child pornography. And that makes sense. If an individual that is accused makes a request for sexy pictures and receives something in return and chooses to do nothing with it, they can't knowingly receive child pornography. And we look at the time of receipt. If they say, please send me child pornography, look at it, and choose to retain it and make that choice, then one knowingly possesses.
Counsel, what worries me is I don't understand what this has to do with the instruction. The instruction seemed actually quite favorable to your client by including this scienter element in the definition of possession. Your argument seems to be that the evidence is insufficient, but that's different from a challenge to the contents of the instruction.
Your Honor, I would respectfully disagree. The court at trial could choose whether or not to read in an intent element to the instruction, and it chose to do so.
That's why I say it seems very favorable, because there was a separate intent element, part of the offense, that was charged separately. So you've now got the jury being charged with a double intent element. But I don't see what's wrong with the instruction as opposed to, on your argument, the evidence.
Well, if the court chooses to answer, your case law says the court has to get it right. And they say a strong suspicion is enough. And what's required under the statute is knowing possession. And what the U.S. Supreme Court instructed in Excitement Video is you read intent into the elements. And here, the court could have said, look back at the instructions that were provided. It could have said possession means to hold, to maintain, but it chose to read in and address the answer with the mens rea. And when it does so, it has to get it right. And that's the second point, Your Honor. Knowledge means knowledge. And knowledge does not respond to suspicion.
Are you arguing that the evidence is insufficient? I don't see such an argument in your brief.
What the argument is that the jury was given the incorrect lens in which to view the evidence. Whether the evidence was sufficient or not is a jury question that it's our position the jury didn't have the opportunity to answer. When this question was asked, the jury had been deliberating in its third day and then returns slightly over an hour and a half.
Yeah, but the district court, in responding to the question, used this strong suspicion language, and that was merely a restatement of the ostrich instruction, and the ostrich instruction is a standard instruction of this court.
Your Honor, in the ostrich instruction, this circuit's pattern instruction, it says you may infer knowledge both from suspicion and indifference to the truth. There's not a place in the ostrich instruction that says simply a suspicion or a strong suspicion is enough.
Yeah, but we have case law that says the purpose of the ostrich instruction is to inform the jury that a person may not escape criminal liability by pleading ignorance if he knows or strongly suspects he is involved in criminal dealings. That language has been approved. What was the error in giving that language to the jury?
When the purpose of the ostrich instruction is saying you can't bury your head in the sand, and that you can look to deliberate indifference to a fact or deliberate avoidance in order to find knowledge, not to find a strong suspicion, Your Honor. And that's where the concern comes from, that in the instruction, as the case is cited to by the government, you can look toward the ostrich instruction and find it to be akin to knowledge. But you can't find strong suspicion because that's not what the government needs to prove to find knowing possession of child pornography. An analogy that is made in the initial brief is that when one receives an opaque envelope, one can't know of the contents of that envelope until it's opened. And if when one opens it, they see that it is illegal pornography and chooses to burn it or throw it away or otherwise rid themselves of it, that ought not be possession. And legally can't be. The circuit has never said, nor has any other, that deletion after viewing something, because one needs to view it to know that it's illegal, that deletion, ridding yourself of it, that could be enough. And that's the question that's before the court. Though I think the court can address Mr. Crani's argument without answering that larger question. Because here, the correct answer, does the downloading, watching, and deleting constitute possession? The correct answer is no. Crani has rid himself of that which is illegal. And we don't know how it got on the computer. There is no evidence of any search term in the government's evidence.
The answer can possibly be no. Then anybody could download all the child porn in the world, watch it once, and delete it, and not have committed a crime. But that can't be right.
At this point, Your Honor, there has not been a higher court to give us that answer. The closest that any circuit has come from which I'm aware is the Tenth Circuit in Tucker, in which there is a specific request for images of naked young girls, and that's made to a website operator, and evidence from the defendant's own statements that he was aware of what he was getting in the district court opinion. And in state court cases, this question's been answered both ways in cases in which I've been involved. There have been trial courts which have found that such action cannot constitute possession, and trial courts which have said that it is something that could go to a jury. Ultimately, the question, Your Honor, is whether you can knowingly possess something for which you don't know what it is. And both the government's expert as well as the defense expert are in agreement that these file names and descriptions are misleading. One example cited by the government is Beyonce Destiny's child porn. And one doesn't know what one's going to get until they open up the file. How the metadata, or not, excuse me, not metadata, how these files are tagged includes a laundry list of sexual terms and offensive terms, well, and you don't know what you're going to get until you open it.
Yeah, so how do you deal with this creation of the hack that was on his computer, which allowed him, you know, allowed people to share files, and you know he had a user rating, and the higher your rating, then you would have access to other people's files faster, and he created a program that allowed him to move his rating up to 771. So how do you, that, and the fact that he, on the day of the search, canceled attempts to download from his machine?
Your Honor, as to your first question, the participation hack has nothing to do with his ability or any other Kazaa user's ability to access files. As you correctly pointed out, it addresses where one would be placed in a queue, which is essentially a waiting line for popular files. And the forensic evidence on that point is in dispute. The government expert found no evidence as to how that got on the computer or any search term to figure out how to do that. And it also conflicts with the government's recognition that Karani was a novice with respect to use of the computer. So there's a question as to how that got there. But with it there, that goes to the question as to whether remand for resentencing would be appropriate. And it being there, whether that constitutes a thing of value. And this court in 1997 in the Black decision found that, which is quoted in one of the more recent decisions that the government cites to, this court found that simply setting oneself up to allow access where there isn't a quid pro quo, in contrast to the Seventh Circuit case the government cited to, that isn't enough.
And
So this
downloading of more than 800 files using the program, you just sort of ignore that, doesn't show any kind of knowledge either of how the program worked. 800 files, and then that meant people could have access to his, and so that's what the thing of value could be. That you just sort of ignore.
Well, I'm sorry, it's not clear to me. Is your question with respect to knowing possession or with respect to whether the sentencing enhancement ought to
apply? Well, knowing possession, because the downloading more than 800 files using the Kazaa program, and with the number of hits that the government expert found on child pornography pages or with child pornography titles.
First, with respect to the number of hits, the government's summary of that evidence is misleading, I think. And I mentioned that in a footnote in the reply. What that evidence shows is how many times those words appear anywhere on the computer. And as I mentioned, looking at any of the exhibits that list the files, the descriptor of a file is essentially a laundry list. That doesn't mean there were 1,000 child porn files. What we have is 6 files for which the content is sexually explicit involving children. And the government says 33 that appear to have been child pornography. None of those files were viewed. And there's no evidence as to how they were searched for in order to get those files. So what...
Doesn't he receive points that moves him ahead of the queue?
He would, yes.
And isn't that something of value?
Well, again, there isn't a case that tells us that. The closest case that I found is the Black case, in which this court said where there is not an exchange. For example, a computer user says, I will give you 3 gigabytes of files, you give me 3 gigabytes of files. That would be enough. But here in Black, this court said that when someone on AOL gives people files and also has access to other files, that isn't enough. So the queue in this circuit hasn't been addressed, but I think that's not enough, because anybody can get access to the files by simply being a Kazaa user. And the default setting on Kazaa is to let other people get into your computer. In fact, the government's own test showed other users getting into the computer without their agent taking any action.
But on this sort of hack thing, that the government agent found that the defendant was increasing his participation level by downloading files from himself. So how do you respond to that?
In
other words, for him to move higher up on the list so he could download faster and have access to more files, he downloads some of his own files so that it appears as if he has more information to distribute. So how do we explain that?
Your Honor, again, with respect to the evidence of that, that's in controversy. With respect to downloading from oneself, I don't think that can play into the sentencing guideline issue because it's not distribution for a thing of value. He's, at worst, reapportioning files to himself. And with respect to the jury instruction, I don't see an application for that either because it is evidence, perhaps, of knowing possession. But the question is, or the issue is, that the judge did not instruct that it is knowing possession. The judge gave an instruction saying that a strong suspicion would be sufficient. I saw that my time's up. Thank you.
Ms. Gravetti.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Kruthi Trivedi, and I represent the United States. Let's begin with the topic of deliberate avoidance. Deliberate avoidance applies in this case, and the defendant's argument to the contrary is wrong. The district court did not abuse its discretion when it gave the deliberate avoidance, or ostrich instruction. Then moving along to the supplemental instruction, which, as the court noted, incorporates the ostrich instruction, that was also correct. In fact, as you noted, the instruction actually affords the defendant more protection than he would have gotten than is required under the current law of possession by requiring the government to prove knowledge at the time of download. That being said, there's also ample evidence that in the record to support the jury's conclusion that the defendant knew that he was getting child pornography at the time of download. The defendant himself stated in his confession that he looked up child pornography out of curiosity. He said that he had a file saved. That was the Segundo file that was still on his computer at the time that it was seized on February 11, 2005. He explained to agents that he turned to child pornography because he was no longer satisfied by adult pornography and that he'd carried out searches. He told them he'd used words that were common to child pornography searches, words like Raygold and pedo. Now, it's true we don't know the exact nature of the searches, but we do know that he told them he was searching according to those exact terms. So while forensically we may not pull up the exact search he entered, we still have his own words. And in addition, just the words themselves, the computer is littered with references to child pornography. As Agent Skinner says at one point, you're not going to find 317 references to child lover on a normal home user's computer. In the same way, you find on that computer 3,720 references to Lolita, 3,603 references to pedo, and 1,799 references to Raygold. And as the jury heard, again, pedo and Raygold are terms that are terms of art in the child pornography field. They refer to specific series of child pornography or to pedophilia, and that clearly show that it was child pornography that was at issue there. The defendant knows.
He was only found guilty of possessing count one, right? The other two counts, one not guilty and one a mistrial?
Yes, Your Honor. He was found guilty of possession. The other two counts were receipt.
Now, would the distribution enhancement would it have been proper if the evidence suggested that the defendant did not know about the shared folder?
Your Honor, with the distribution enhancement, it was regardless of whether he knew about the shared folder, you still have what he sees on his screen, the photos that the agents took at the time that they executed the search warrant. And you go in there, and there's files being shared. As you mentioned, there was a file that had been canceled. There was, I think the record also suggests, a file that had been aborted, and there were two other files on the computer. Moreover, he says when he's going in, he's searching for child pornography, and he's getting it through Kazaa. He voluntarily signed up. He searched for the files. He used Kazaa to download videos of children being sexually exploited, and he maintained those videos, and those videos were available, as you can see when you look at the screen.
So is it your position that from the minute he downloaded his first file from Kazaa, he was distributing materials to other Kazaa users?
I guess, Your Honor, what I was trying to say is that by participating in Kazaa, he is, unless he takes affirmative steps not to, making his files available. He downloads them, and then they go into the My Shared folder. And then he sees on his traffic window the files as they're leaving his computer. And he's using this hack, and the hack is a way to increase what appears to be his popularity. So he understands that what's going on is distribution. The more he distributes, the better it is for him. In terms of the thing of value that we're discussing, there was only a two-level enhancement. It was for distribution. There was no five-level enhancement in this case. And the two-level increase for distribution, it was for distribution, I think it's not mentioned in subsections A and E of 2G2.2B3B. So that distribution then means any act, according to the guidelines, advisory application notes, including possession with intent to distribute, and also posting material on a website for public viewing. By having these files accessible to others, he is distributing. He's making them freely available and openly accessible.
So if he had prevented, taken an affirmative step to prevent Kazaa users from accessing his shared folder, distribution enhancement would not be proper.
If he had affirmatively taken steps to keep from distributing child pornography, then yes, Your Honor, I think a distribution enhancement would not have been proper. However, in this case, he did not affirmatively take steps, and in fact, he made his child pornography readily available to others. And as the Schaefer Court noted, you don't have to actively push child pornography onto another person to distribute it. What he did in this case was, in fact, distributing child pornography. And the enhancement, the two-level enhancement here that Judge Grady gave, was an appropriate enhancement. As for the, just to go back for one moment to the knowing possession, in addition, there were the, in addition to the references and his comments and all the hits that were found on there, there were the files themselves. And I just remind the court that some of the names of those files, while I'd prefer not to say them right now, they do indicate very clearly that what he's looking for and what he's getting is child pornography. This wasn't a case where he wasn't sure what he was getting, had no idea, and all of a sudden it shows up on his computer, despite his arguments to the jury otherwise. The jury had the opportunity to evaluate that, and they rejected that. There was more than sufficient evidence to show that he did knowingly possess this child pornography. And while the instruction did increase the burden on the government, even with that increased burden, it was clear that what he'd done was to possess child pornography in violation of the law. If there are any further questions, I'm happy to answer them from Your Honors.
Thank you very much, counsel. The case is taken under advisement. And Mr. Gunther, we appreciate your willingness to accept the appointment. You have the court's thanks.